starting a savings.
Girl, get your money straight.
Pay yourself first.
I've just been tricking off. I ain't about nothing.
On today's episode of Corporate Homie,
unofficial and official mentors. Phil Jackson was not an exceptional basketball player.
I heard the first time in my life the words big law.
My boss got back from vacation. He was like, I've seen great promise in you. Hey, homies.
What's up, homies?
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast. Woo woo.
Welcome back.
Well, we are so excited. We're talking about one of our favorite topics, which are people who have been influential and instrumental in our lives, unofficial and official mentors.
Yeah, just people who've had a great influence in our careers.
Yeah, so, you know, it was hard for me to prepare for this episode because there's been so many people that I've learned so much stuff from, but I tried to narrow down to a handful of key people, and I'm sure you had the same challenge.
Yeah, and I guess we should say at the outset of the episode that this is about, you know, people who have actually mentored, or at least my list is about people who've mentored me. Not necessarily people who've sponsored. I've definitely had other people in my career who were great sponsors, but this is my list of like mentors.
A mentor is somebody that has given you advice and counsel. They may or may not work where you work. They may or may not even work in the industry that you work in, but their counsel and their guidance has been instrumental and helpful to your career. Conversely, a sponsor is somebody that is using their political capital that is within the organization to help advocate for your career. And that is probably the biggest difference, is that a sponsor has to work in your organization and they're actually using their influence to help advance
your
career.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree with that. So my first mentor, which probably does not shock you at all on my list, is Michelle Dickerson. So I wanted to be a lawyer, or as the urban legend is told, my mom and dad, that I told them in kindergarten that I wanted to be a lawyer and never changed.
Actually, you said you wanted to be an argument.
Right. In kindergarten and never changed my mind. But I didn't know any actual lawyers. And the very first lawyer that I knew was Michelle Dickerson. And she came to visit us when we were in Italy. So I think we were in eighth grade or ninth grade, and she was on her bar trip. And so it was sort of my first exposure to even knowing what a bar was. Much, you know, I knew. And then at that time, I just knew she had taken this big test, and then she was traveling around the world. I was so fascinated that this young Black woman really at that was traveling around the world by herself internationally. And that it was super cool because she was the only person that came to visit us when we were in Italy.
So it's funny because Michelle was on my list too, but.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good.
For a different reason. I didn't want to be an attorney, but I remember she was the first person that showed us that the highest achievement is possible. So she was the first person I remember that I personally knew that went to an Ivy League school. That's when I realized what Ivy League was versus just college. Like you said, no one came to visit us in Italy. We barely got to talk on the phone to people because it was so expensive. So I remember thinking that she had more money than everybody else because she was visiting us.
Right, she was rich, right?
And the third thing I remember thinking is they asked her to do a presentation at our school. And I remember thinking, she's never taught school. And the fact that the school has basically created an assembly around her because she's here says that when you have the highest achievement, people let you come in and give your story.
So yeah.
That's what I remember.
And then, you know, sort of throughout my career, she's been an incredible sounding board. It turned out that she was a bankruptcy lawyer. And I did not know that when I picked the practice area. I knew Michelle was a lawyer, but I was completely unaware that I had chosen a practice area that was actually her practice area. And so she has given me so many helpful hints, not just as a bankruptcy lawyer, but also, you know, she did big law and all of that. And so she's just been incredibly influential in giving me wise sage counsel throughout my career.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So the first person I put down is going to sound like not much of a mentor when I first say his name, but then when I explain why I chose him, I hope it makes more sense. So, you know, basketball was such a catalyst for a lot of the different things that I got to do, mainly to go to school for free. And so I actually have Leroy Fryer down as my first mentor. And the reason
Leroy being— Leroy that went to school with us or his daddy?
His dad, not Leroy that went to school with us.
Really?
Because he used to meet with me in Sicily by myself at the base gym on, you know, the evenings on Saturdays and help me hone my skills as a point guard. Like, help me work on my— and I realize now that people, you know, pay folks to coach their kids that, you know, were all of, you know, what have you. There was none of that going on at that time, but he was basically serving as a one-on-one individual coach for me. And I remember him talking to me about, you know, playing basketball in New York City and then playing in college before he got hurt and went into the Air Force. But those that was the first time I ever got individual attention on my game. And I feel like it took my game to another level before we came back to the States. And so it was really helpful in helping me secure a scholarship. So that's why I have—
that's so interesting. And do you feel like having had a one-on-one coach is part of why you're open to things like therapy, like having your own coach, about like not being hesitant to get a business development coach or a life
all
coach
of those
or
things.
Whatever,
just being,
because
just
you
being
had
coachable, right? And I remember thinking, for whatever reason, I had a tremendous amount of respect for his basketball acumen, even though he was like a transportation sergeant in the Air Force. But it was something about the way that he spoke about basketball and his knowledge that I knew he knew what he was talking about. And I knew that that wasn't going to negate me from listening to him just because he was not a professional basketball player now, if that makes sense.
Right, which kind of is the way it works. Like, a lot of times, I mean, the guy that I take golf lessons from was a golf pro, but never was like a household name or anything like that, but certainly has been extremely instrumental in my golf career. So why wouldn't it be the same for other things like that? It doesn't have to be— the person doesn't have to be Oprah to be able to give you sage business advice.
Right. I mean, Phil Jackson was not an exceptional basketball player. I mean, he was a role player.
Right. Perfect example. Okay. So my next person is kind of a combo. They go together. I have Abdul Kalan and Dolores Simmons together. Many people who know my story know, again, I didn't know a lot of lawyers, didn't really have an idea of what big law was. I was blessed. And, you know, they say the Lord looks like after babies and fools. And I always say I'm a living witness. I met Dolores Simmons at church. Her husband was the pastor of the church that I was attending in law school. She knew I was in law school, and then she took it upon herself to introduce me to an associate. At the time, she was clerking for a federal judge, but to an associate at the largest firm in Alabama who was on the recruiting committee. And the two of them took a Saturday, I will never forget it as long as I have my good mind, took a Saturday of Martin Luther King weekend and sat down with me. And that is when I heard the first time in my life the words big law. They explained to me what that meant. They explained to me that I had grades that were going to afford me to be able to go there and sort of coach me through the on-campus process and all of that. And so that's one of those things that people assume everyone knows, but I understand that everyone does not know. I did not know. And but for that lunch, Abdul and my career would have been incredibly different. Abdul and Dolores changed the entire trajectory of my career from that lunch. And then they went on. They were always like that. I remember when I took the bar, they sent me, I was broke. They sent me like a gift card so I could stay in a hotel and I could focus during the actual bar. They've just showed up for me.
Things that you don't know that you don't know that you need to do because you don't have a bunch of big law attorneys in your world. So you need somebody to explain.
Right. They were the ones who, yeah, they later explained to me that I should clerk for a federal judge and what that was. And so they just kept pouring into me and have been just incredibly, incredible. Just step after step after step in my journey to the firm.
So very, I can definitely see why they would be a package deal as well. What I love about that is, you know, the church that you met them at was not some huge mega church. I mean, there would probably be on average 75 people, if that, at church on any given Sunday. I just think that sometimes we think that big means better, and it doesn't always mean better, because that small individualized attention is probably how you got to, you know, I mean, you know, just, I don't know.
Right, which just goes back, it's almost links with yours and Mr. Fryer, right? Small individualized attention and not from the shiniest penny in the room.
That's right.
Is what's helpful to you.
Right. So my next mentor was my very first boss at my first professional job, which was Mark Delansky. I didn't know what value added selling was. I did not understand that, you know, having an engaging, charismatic personality could lead to being an effective salesperson. And so he was the very first person to not be dismissive of, oh, you're just good with people, but to connect that personality to
and to explain to you that it was a skill.
That it was a skill, and how to hone that skill, how to utilize that skill. He had played soccer at the University of Virginia and was just, again, spent a lot of, I was like a big sponge of knowledge around Mark. He had done well at the company. He wasn't that much older than me. But had I not gotten that first boss, I think I would do something different altogether. I don't think I would be in financial services. I don't think I would still be in client-facing work. I would have never thought of what I was able to do as a skill. I would have been dismissive of it and just thought it was some kind of talent that I was lucky to have. And he helped me understand, just like athleticism, I think that's the biggest thing. It's just like that. If you work on it, it can become a skill. Right.
So, that's a great analogy, right? You can be athletic and then you still have to hone it so that you can have a skill and then be a great player.
The greatest basketball player in somebody's neighborhood that didn't even make the high school basketball team, let alone to the NBA. Right. And Mark Delansky was able to connect that. So shout out to you, Mark Delansky, if you're listening right now.
Love that. Like, do you know where he is? Are y'all Facebook friends?
So he's one of those people that, you know how I am. I pick up and reach out to people every so often. So probably every 24 months or so, we don't necessarily talk on the phone, but via email, via LinkedIn. So he's back in the DMV area, still in technical sales.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're in contact in that way.
That's amazing. Okay, I'm like you. Now I'm getting into actual bosses and people I work with, but who have been mentors. So my next person is UW Clemen. So
hey, Judge.
So after, you know, I was a federal law clerk. I did a judicial clerkship. I'm a client. Hashtag, you probably seen that on my social media. Hashtag Clemen Clerk. So what up to all the Clemen clerks listening? But Judge Clement, you know, was a mountain of a judge, a legal giant, you know, had all this stuff, but he had a very, almost like an uncle or a dad, you know, really took me under his wing, told me a lot of the struggle of being sort of a black attorney, especially in Alabama, and kind of all that entailed. And then more importantly, the one thing that he really taught me was open your connections to people. Judge was a big connector. He knew everybody. Everybody knew him. Chambers flowed in and out of different people. I really understood the importance of connections and maintaining connections and, you know, just maintaining relationships from working for him. And he was just always willing to share those. So I even remember as soon as I finished my clerkship, he was in town. The Just the Beginning Foundation, which is a conference of African-American judges in the country, get together once a year or every 2 years. And the conference just happened to be in Houston literally like a month and a half or 6 weeks after I finished my clerkship. And he invited me out to dinner. And when I got there, Elaine Jones,
wow,
who ran the NAACP defense
fund. Even I know that, and I'm not an attorney.
Right. And so it was like the three of us having dinner. Chopping it up. And she gave me advice that day, because I remember sort of being there like, oh, Miss Jones, you know, it's so nice to meet you, but
people,
I'm at this big farm.
United will never be defeated.
And I remember sort of being like, oh, it's so great to meet you, and no worries, I'm at this farm now, but what, I'm gonna get to the people. I'm gonna find my way back. And she was like, no, baby, someone needs to be in these farms. Someone needs to show other people that it can be done. If you like it, stay. You don't have to be looking. You don't have to look for your exit. And so I think she was the first person to free me to be open to whatever career I wanted at the farm. And that came from Judge.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I love Judge. I love that whenever he sees Daddy, he's like, how was our daughter?
How's our daughter? Yes.
Yeah,
so
Judge
funny.
Is great. All right, my next one, which is not going to be a surprise to Demetria at all, is Mr. Ben Phelps. I affectionately refer to him as Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the reason being is, just like I said, Mark Delansky helped me take, you know, kind of your natural talent and turn that into a skill. Ben helped me take all this quantitative book learning and learn how to apply that in a practical way. So one of my favorite Ben Phelps stories is one of the first loans I worked on was for a movie theater. And, you know, I literally took everything that I had learned in business school and in the formal credit training program that BB&T took us through. And so I took all the equipment, I summed it up, I multiplied that by 75%. And I'm like, you know, this is what's going to be the advance rate, and this is what we're going to lend on, and we got this much collateral, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember he would take your credit packages and mark them up with a red pen. And he literally, when we were talking about it, he said, you're going to give somebody $100 for a used cable box? Would you pay $100 for a used cable box? And I was like, no. He was like, well, that's what you got over here. Demetri, this is a movie theater. It's hot dog warmers. You gonna pay that for some hot dog warmers? And I had never thought about it.
Never thought about it in a logical way. And so he taught you to think, like, don't get so caught up in writing the credit that you didn't think about the actual business.
He took classroom application to practical application. And the best thing he ever told me about every loan is he said, whatever the loan amount is that they're asking you for, I want you to think about it like your grandfather left you that amount of money in inheritance. And would you spend that on that? And I thought that was a great way to start.
Oh, right. So then you start to think, like, am I about to give you this money? Because this is my money. So every dollar I give you is coming out my inheritance. And I'm an investor, so to speak.
Said,
oh, that's so interesting.
You have no loan authority to say yes. You have unlimited loan authority to say no.
Say no. That's funny. That is classic. Okay, this person probably won't surprise you either. My next person is Barry Spears. Hey, Barry. So when I got to the firm, I, you know, was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I worked for a number of partners, like every young associate. And then there was a partner who just took a great interest in me, sort of like you were saying about Mark. Barry spent a lot of one-on-one time with me, just took a real interest. And I remember him telling me, I'm going to teach you to practice law. And so kind of like you were saying about your, you know, gregariousness and outgoingness, he was sort of the first person to say to me, that is a skill, but it is a skill that people are going to want to manipulate. It's a skill that people are going to want to hone in on, and they're going to try to turn you into like the poster girl for recruiting and women's initiative and diversity and all that, because you are so outgoing and fun, and then you're going to look up and you're not going to know how to practice, and then someone's going to be trying to push you out because you don't have
politics too.
Yes. And
for
so,
10 years down the road that you can't even see.
And the way we got into that conversation was I was working on a document for him, and then he hadn't given me his comments back. You know, this is all before everybody powered up and all of that. And I left to go to a recruiting reception in Austin. And when I got back, he was like, the firm bought me a plane ticket. I was thinking about, like, the firm has put me on the list. They bought me a plane ticket. He was like, this is how we generate revenue. No. And it just really helped me focus on, like, revenue generating, myself.
You are off task.
Yes. And how to stay on task. So always, anybody who knows me knows I have much love for Barry. So many life lessons, so many work lessons that he gave me. So yes, Barry Spears.
Awesome. My next mentor is the first person that put me into leadership. And that is, Mr. Bobby Blakely. You know,
I would say this is so Bobby. Now we're to Bobby.
Be squared. Love me some Bobby. Very much in contact with him. He actually listens to the podcast. So, hey, Bobby. But, Bobby taught me so many things. Like you said, not just a lot of the politics of BB&T, how to navigate the culture. I 100% appreciated him not only seeing leadership in me, but teaching me how to be a good leader. Doing things for me without even taking credit for it. That's the biggest thing I learned from him in leadership. There are so many people that will play like they are checking for you and that they're looking out for you.
And they'll actually
tell you that they're doing that. So I can remember being on a call with Bobby when I was a baby banker, and I didn't have any at that time. It was a long time ago, but I didn't have any lending authority. And he, went into his breast pocket, wrote himself a note. And that afternoon, I got lending authority. And my boss at the time, nobody we've talked about on this podcast, was on vacation. And when my boss got back from vacation, he was like, I've seen great promise in you, and I decided to get you some lending authority. And I thought, oh my goodness. But I said that to myself because I thought, oh my gosh, I work for somebody I can't trust. But I need to know that too, right? Like I need to know that. So there are a lot of things that Bobby did for my career that I know that he did that he didn't take credit for. So that was one of the biggest lessons I learned. Good leaders don't need to take credit for every little thing that they've done for somebody.
Yeah, and I have found it so interesting because I've definitely had people do the same thing. Is that normally the people who come in to tell you how they've helped you did not help you at all.
No, they're just the people on the sideline after somebody has taken the ketchup bottle and loosened the top. They just came in, took it off, and poured it.
Right. And then the people who kind of don't say anything are the people out there
scratching,
moving and
surviving.
And surviving for you. And I remember being pretty, like you said, almost floored to learn, because the person had, they came to you like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm in there. I'm cutting for you. I'm looking out for you. And then somebody else in the meeting was like, completely unrelated, doesn't even know this person that said this to you. It was like, hey, just want to let you know your boy, he's silent when they're talking about you. And you're like, wait, what?
But you need to know that too. So we can do a whole separate podcast if we were willing to put people on blast. Are people that we learned things from that didn't help us in our careers, but that's a different episode.
Who swear they did. Exactly. Okay, I only have two more. Okay, my next one is my beloved Clifton Jessup. So, I say Clifton Jessup is like my bankruptcy uncle. I met Clifton Jessup. He was giving a speech at a CLE. I had never seen a black bankruptcy partner in my life. I was a very young lawyer. I was with him my first year. So I went up to him after the speech, introduced myself, found out that he practiced in Dallas. I was living in Houston. And he made the mistake of saying to me, well, if you're ever in Dallas, give me a call. because he didn't know I was the kind of person
that would actually call
who would do just that. But Clifton has and continues to be, he is now Judge Jessup. He just was very a person who helped me think about the big picture, like chess with my career. And what I mean by that is, you know, like just like Barry helped me think about the kind of practitioners within the organization I wanted to be, Clifton helped me think about things like what other organizations I wanted to be involved in. He also helped me think about how being a lawyer and having a certain amount of money allowed me to bless others and be an influence and to work with others. He is tremendously gracious. He is very giving, never is asking for anything in return, and not just with his time, but with his resources as well. And I really have enjoyed, you know, learning that from him, because I think I have a cheerful, giving spirit. And so he helped me figure out how to do that at the firm and still maintain integrity at the firm and be able to help people with grace.
Oh, that's awesome. And I got a chance to meet Clifton earlier this year. And that was, after hearing about him for so many years, that was pretty cool.
That's right. After one of the corporate homie speeches. Yeah.
So my next person is Dante Wilson. You know, when I got to the bank, Dante got promoted to regional president 6 months after I got to the bank. And I just remember thinking somebody named Dante Wilson, it was a good shot that he might be black. And I remember I sent him a handwritten note that basically said, "You're an inspiration. Congratulations on being named the first regional president. I hope one day our paths will be able to cross." And he left me a voicemail back, and I remember being struck by that. And
oh wow.
And then fast forward a few months later, we were all going to be at National Black MBA, and they made the mistake of sending out the schedule when everybody was working. So conveniently, it was,
you got to listen,
every time Dante could work. I could work.
You could work. And he's like, "I'm going to work with Dante."
And I'm like, I just wanted to get to know him. And I remember he said, "Well, let's meet for a cup of coffee." And what you're talking about, Demetria, he started laying out. He said, "Well, let's have a conference call to talk about your career. Pull this, this, and this for me." Once he saw I was for real, he's like, "Okay, this is the way you raise your profile within the bank." And then he would be the person that if the president of the bank was coming and I was chosen as one of the people to take him on a call, I could call Dante and say, "I'm getting a chance to take Ricky Brown on a call." And he would say, "These are the things you talk to Ricky about in the car on the way to the call. These are the things you talk to him about when you're coming back
after the call." This is how you pregame with him, this is how you postgame with him.
This is how you get your profile raised. Volunteer to do this. Volunteer to do a presentation on that. So no, he never got in the room and got me promoted, but he helped me do things along the way for my career that I still use today, and more importantly, that I've helped other young people do with their career today. So shout out to Dante for that.
Because he was so entrenched in the organization, he had a breadth of organizational
Absolutely.
Knowledge. Okay. Love that. Okay, my final person is Tom Forestier. So after Barry left the firm, Tom Forestier moved into Barry's office, so he sat right next door to me. And he was, you know, he was a minority partner. He chaired the diversity committee. I had not seen anyone who had such a passion for diversity in the law firm before. And so he came in with all this energy around, you know, women and diversity and ethnic and racial diversity. And then he just helped me. He was sort of the first person to help me think about, like, he was a big firm supporter, but also he was a big Demetria supporter. And so I remember he was the first person to help me think about, where did I want my career 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And did that mean that I was going to be at the firm? And I remember being so impressed with that because he was at the firm. And so he gave me this advice. He said, "You can stay here your whole career, but every couple of years, you should get out there, see what's happening, and choose the organization again."
I love that. Choose the organization again. I love that.
Right. Don't just be at the organization because you just have been
too lazy, too afraid. Don't put it in a neutral.
Neutral. Yes.
So correct. My last person is very similar, which is Tasha Katapotis. So.
Oh, I remember Tasha. So, you know, Bemetria.
Bemetria. Right. So she was actually from Memphis originally, had gone to Vanderbilt, was a female regional president. Similar to what you were saying about Tom, she was the first person that was, you know, hey, what do you want to do with your career? And I'm like, I'm trying to be you. I want to be a regional president. And she was like, you're not thinking big enough. I mean, outside of just working here at BB&T. And I was like, oh, wow. Right. You know, okay. And so just having somebody that was a woman, she also just kept it, as the young people would say, 100, where she was like, let me be super clear. You cannot
she was
do
always
what these
like
men
that.
Do. And then she started breaking mm-hmm. it down. You know, this man has slept with this person. They did this. If you did that as a woman, you would no longer
You're
work
out.
Here. And not like you know those things innately, but you need somebody to remind you that, like, the rules are different for you, and not just because you're a minority, but because, you know, you are female. And just, that kind of, you know, straight talk, forward talk, think bigger. She was, I still say this to this day. She said, everybody should be the president and CEO of whatever their name is, enterprise.
Enterprises. That's where
yeah,
you got that
I got
from.
That
you
from her.
That the time.
So okay. I just thought that was so very important and so instrumental. So that's my list.
So that's my list too. And I just want to say to the homies that, you know, I had these six people. There's not one person on this list that I don't have a relationship with today. And I think that for me, that's how instrumental they were in my career. It was not a
situation. And remind the homies how long you've been practicing law.
You trying to tell
no,
my age,
I'm trying to
okay.
let them know that these practicing. Are long-term relationships, that this is not a five-year, you know, deal.
Yes, I've been practicing 18 years. And so all of these people, I have actually seen their face in 2018. So, like, I, you know, had lunch with Tom Forrester last week. I've seen, you know what I mean? I just want to reiterate, like, these types of mentoring relationships are the ones that
right.
stick.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. No, I wasn't trying to show your age. I was just trying to speak to impactful mentors have lasting impact. Because, like I said, we're talking about folks that I met in 1997, you know, the very first year that I started working in corporate America. So we'd love to hear from you, homies, some of the lessons that you've learned from your favorite mentors. So as always, you can find us on all things social, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, always Corporate Homie, HOMIE.
Yeah, and feel free to reach out. Tell us your mentoring experience. And if you haven't been in touch with your mentor, maybe this will be a catalyst for you to reach out to them on your platform. Thank you to all the homies. We've been really on the road and having lots of speaking opportunities.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And we're very appreciative of that. If you want us to come out and speak to your organization, you can email us at info@corporatehomie.com. And if you have show topic ideas, just send those to questions@corporatehomie.com.
And as always, thank you for listening. And until next time,
hustle hard, homies.
All of you, get you a twin. Get you another homie.